The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Sensible human knows not to do. Never lick a bus station door handle. Never start a conversation with a man about infinite jest. And never go on a radio show hosted by a guy named Bubba the Love Sponge.
Oh.
Apparently, Tucker Carlson is not a sensible human being.
You think?
I'm not defending underage marriage. I just don't think it's the same thing exactly as pulling a child from a bus stop and sexually assaulting that child. The rapist in this case has made a lifelong commitment to live and take care of the person.
I love women, but they're extremely primitive. They're basic.
Well, I like you too, and I mean that. You always say I mean that in a non-f***ing way, but I actually mean it in a completely f***ing way.
Ugh, that is vile and disgusting, and presumably the audition tape that got him a job interview at Fox. Mm. But it gets worse.
If there were a Democrat to come out in the 2008 election and say, you know what, the problem is, it's these lunatic Muslims who are behaving like animals, and I'm going to kill as many of them as I can if you elect me. And I'd vote for you if you said that.
Iraq is a crappy place filled with a bunch of, you know, semi-literate, primitive monkeys.
Oh my God! Tucker Carlson publicly advocated a genocide while promoting his MSNBC show?
Mm.
To quote Tucker Carlson's face, huh? After the release of these tapes, Tucker issued a statement responding with all the grace and humility you'd expect.
Media Matters caught me saying something naughty on a radio show. I'm on television every weeknight live for an hour. If you want to know what I think, you can watch.
Oh, you naughty little bad boy. Advocating genocide. Well, guess what, fucko? We have been watching your show, and we found it's a revolting trash heap of racist talking points. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying Tucker Carlson is a white supremacist. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Yes, I am.
Yes,
but
good.
You don't have to. No, I mean. But you don't have to take my word for it.
We have a moral obligation to admit the world's poor, they tell us, even if it makes our own country poorer and dirtier and more divided.
Speech says, look, our civilization is superior, and we need to defend it. What's wrong with saying that?
In case anyone in Tucker's audience doesn't pick up on his subtle messages, he sometimes turns up that dog whistle.
Latin American countries are changing election outcomes here by forcing demographic change on this country. Their political success does not depend on good policies, but on demographic replacement, and they'll do anything to make sure it happens. I'm just four Americans, and nobody cares about them. It's no. Like, shut up, you're dying, we're going to replace you.
Oh, that's weird. Where have I heard sweaty white men yelling about being replaced before?
You will not replace us! Oh, yeah.
So he's against white supremacy, but uses the catchphrase of the Charlottesville mob? That's like saying, I hate the movie Borat, but you know who loves it? My wife. And none of this was hard to find. The only in-depth research we did was to determine that his name can be rearranged to spell old cracker nuts.
Ah, okay, good to know.
You know who else thinks that Tucker is a white supremacist?
Who?
White supremacists!
Yeah.
Former KKK grand wizard and current plastic surgery mannequin David Duke calls Tucker his favorite commentator. Meanwhile, the founder of the neo-Nazi website The Daily Stormer says Tucker Carlson Tonight is basically Daily Stormer the show, and he calls Tucker literally our greatest ally. Now,
Many of Tucker's defenders say you can't fault someone for who their fans are, which is kind of true. If you own a restaurant that neo-Nazis go to, that doesn't make you a white supremacist. But if neo-Nazis go there because you make the soup spell out racist tropes, then yeah, you might be a white supremacist. Mm. Tucker doesn't worry about it, though, because it barely even exists.
The American Nazi Party and the KKK don't really exist in a meaningful sense. They may have an office or a website. White supremacy is not ubiquitous in America. It's
really?
Not a crisis.
Really?
It's not even a meaningful category.
Really?
It is incredibly rare. You could easily live your entire life in this country without meeting a single person who believes anything like that. Most of us have lived lives like that.
Really?
I have.
You know who hasn't lived a life like that? Anyone who's ever met you.
There is only
one kind of prejudice in America.
Everybody gets a safe space except white men. They are hated and despised. You divide people on the basis of their skin color and say this one group of people's lives matter. Everybody's life matters.
Yeah, it's so racist to say Black Lives Matter, just like it was so racist of Lincoln to free the slaves because he didn't free a single white person. Tucker has spent nearly 20 years getting paid to be an angry white man on all three cable news networks, only two of which have fired him so far. Playing to white victimhood is his whole shtick, yet he claims he doesn't know what he's doing.
But this is insane. I don't even know what white nationalist means.
That's okay, Tucker. There's a show on Fox that can teach you all about it.
Oh, yes. We haven't talked about Tucker Carlson on this program for good reason. I mean, I've never, ever watched his show. But Media Matters has been digging up all this audio of, Samantha Bee so eloquently called him, Fucker Carlson, on the Bubba the Love Sponge radio show, where he said all kinds of really sickening things. So, hey, he said it. He's got to own it. So there you go. Samantha Bee covering the Tucker Carlson insanity for us. But there's big news today. It's been a busy morning so far in our nation's capital. The big news, of course, is that the Senate, just moments ago, completed voting on the resolution of disapproval over Donald Trump's national emergency declaration for the southern border. So the vote, it passed. This resolution of disapproval passed 59 to 41 with 12 courageous Republicans crossing over and voting with the Democrats. Yay! So who were those 12? Well, hold on. I've got their names here. Alexander, Blunt, Collins, Lee, Moron. Oh, that's Moran. I'm sorry. Murkowski, Paul, Portman, Romney, Rubio, Toomey, and Wicker. Now, if you're thinking to yourself, but wait a minute, Tom Tillis, I think of, where is he from? I don't know, one of the southern states. Tom Tillis had earlier signaled that he was going to vote in favor of the resolution. Well, pressure was put on Senator Tillis by the White House, and he flipped back. Tom Tillis has no balls. If you would like to contribute a pair of balls for Tom Tillis, think again. Maybe just vote against him the next election. Is Mitch McConnell in the bunch? No, of course not. Mitch McConnell's not in the bunch. Now, there was another vote in the Senate. You might think, all right, so this is the first time that Donald Trump has been rebuked by the Republican-controlled Senate. To which I would say, oh, not so fast, my friends. Let me find this story, because this also happened this morning, where the House, that was the only time the Senate did it. The House passed a resolution this morning by a vote of 420-0, urging the Justice Department to make Special Counsel Robert Mueller's full report public and available to Congress. Now, if you're thinking, wow, a unanimous vote in the House of Representatives, I'd say not so fast. Because although the vote was 420-0, not all the Republicans voted in favor of it. Four of them, yes, four, voted present. Who were these chicken shit four? Oh, shit. I don't have it here. One of them was that moron from Florida, Matt Gaetz. In case you're wondering, Gosar, the idiot from where's he from? Louisiana, I believe, or Texas or Tennessee. You know, he's the dentist who knows all about body language because he's a dentist. He's also the guy whose numerous siblings all got together and recorded a commercial for his opponent in the last election saying, do not reelect our brother. He is an idiot. He doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't deserve to be in Congress. Do not vote for him. He is simply unqualified for the job. So he was one who voted present. There were two others whose names escape me at the moment. But, you know, it's what you would expect. So it was 420 to zero with four voting present. So not quite unanimous. Yeah. All right. So I guess we're into it. Let's continue and talk about the other stuff in the news, because it was a busy morning in Connecticut. Big news out of Connecticut this morning, where a divided Connecticut Supreme Court ruled that the gun maker Remington can be sued over how it marketed the Bushmaster rifle that was used to kill 20 children and six educators at Sandy Hook Elementary School in 2012. Sorry, quick aside to answer a question from the chat room. Otto Desha is asking, is Gates in my is my district's congressman? Hell no. My congressman is Ted Deutsch, who is better than most, let me say. Not quite progressive, but he's not a conservative either. I've got my issues with him, but so far, you know, he's okay. He's certainly better. Gates is in the Florida Panhandle. It's like Alabama Minor. It's Joe Scarborough's former district, and unfortunately, it is ruby red. It is right at borders. It's like the, you know, the Pensacola, Florida district that borders Alabama. So no Democrats live there. Anyway, back to this decision by the Connecticut Supreme Court today. The plaintiffs include a survivor of the Sandy Hook shooting and relatives of nine people who were killed in the massacre. They argued that the AR-15 style rifle used by the shooter is too dangerous for the public, and that Remington, oh, Gosar is from Arizona. Thank you. I knew it was something out there. Anyway, Remington glorified the weapon in marketing it to young people. So the justices on the Connecticut Supreme Court issued a 4-3 decision that reinstated a wrongful death lawsuit and overturned a lower court ruling that the lawsuit was prohibited by a 2005 federal law that shields gun manufacturers from liability in most cases when their products are used in crimes. So that's big. That's a big move in the right direction. All right. In other news, we found this out yesterday, but it's still in our news today. Donald Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, was sentenced to another 43 months in prison on top of the 47 months he got last week, for a total of about 7.5 years behind bars on federal conspiracy and obstruction charges. Judge Amy Berman Jackson warned Manafort's attorneys about feeding Trump's no collusion narrative, saying that prosecutors had not addressed the issue of collusion in this case. And she said that it was still under investigation by special counsel Robert Mueller. There's no cameras allowed in federal courtrooms, but there were reporters in the room who transcribed exactly what she said. And here's her quote. This is the judge speaking. The no collusion refrain that runs through the entire defense memorandum is unrelated to matters at hand. It's hard to understand why an attorney would write that. The no collusion mantra is simply a non sequitur. The judge then issued what could be taken as a warning to anyone still facing potential charges related to the special counsel probe. She said, court is one of those places where facts still matter. So what did Paul Manafort's attorney do? He walked out of the courtroom up to the waiting microphones assembled in front of the huge gathering of press waiting for the hearing to end, stepped up to the microphone and said this.
What I'm about to say will not be a surprise. Judge Jackson conceded that there was absolutely no evidence of any Russian collusion in this case. So that makes two courts have ruled no evidence of any collusion with any Russian.
Liar.
That's not what she said.
That's not what she said.
Very sad.
That's not what she said.
very sad.
That's not what she said.
That's not what she said.
Callous, liar sentence that is totally unnecessary. Much like this.
You guys are liars, man. You're not lawyers. You're liars.
All right, I know I played this sound yesterday, right after it happened, but it's too stunning to not repeat again today. That this lawyer, I mean, the judge specifically said, quote, this no collusion refrain that runs through the entire defense memorandum is unrelated to matters at hand. The no collusion mantra is simply a non sequitur. It wasn't addressed in this case. It never came up, and it was not ruled upon. And this moron of a judge, I mean, of an attorney, goes before the microphones and says the exact opposite. Says that the judge ruled in their favor, said that there was no collusion. She never said there was no collusion. This is gaslighting. This is what Trump and his lemmings do, and they do it so well. They will look you in the eye and say, the sky is green. You'll look outside and say, well, no, the sky is blue. And they'll say, it's green. We know it's green. We'll prove it's green. Look with your own two eyes. It's green. And after a while, you go, am I nuts? You're not nuts. They are doing this to you. And to prove it, so Donald Trump, I guess this morning, there was a little press gaggle in the Oval Office. He was meeting with the Prime Minister of Ireland. And again, he doubled down or tripled down or quadrupled down on the lies that that lawyer told.
When the Mueller report is coming down,
I have no idea. Have no idea. I can only tell you one thing. Again, that was proven today. No collusion. There's no collusion.
It was not.
Collusion.
Bullshit.
And there hasn't been collusion. And it was all a big hoax. And you know it. It was done and stated by the Democrats because they lost an election that they should have won because
oh
the
my
Electoral
God.
College is
oh
a big
God.
Advantage for Democrats,
oh
not
my
for
God.
Republicans. Today, again, no collusion. The other day, no collusion.
That's a
there
lie.
Was no collusion.
It's a bold-faced lie, or is it bald-faced lie? However the saying goes, it's a fucking lie! The man is a prolific liar. That's the one thing he does often and does well. He lies through his teeth. Nobody has ruled anything on collusion. The Mueller report hasn't issued its findings one way or another because it hasn't issued its findings! Oh my God. And yes, thank goodness there were people that were in the courtroom who could shout down that attorney through his lies. He should be removed from the bar. He should have his bar license taken away from him for misrepresenting what the judge said. But karma's a bitch, you know, because just moments after Manafort's latest sentence was handed down, you know, adding 43 months onto the 47 he already got, the Manhattan District Attorney then indicted Manafort on 16 charges of fraud and conspiracy. And by the way, because these are charges brought by the state, not in federal court, these are charges that can't be overturned by a presidential pardon. Karma is a bitch. We'll say it again. By the way, Roger Stone was back before that same federal judge this morning, Amy Berman Jackson, for a status hearing that was initially set to hash out pretrial issues and potentially set a trial date. And that's pretty much what happened. Stone's trial will start November 5th, is expected to last about 2 weeks. And the judge then said that she didn't wish to waste time talking about the re-release of a book Stone published in 2017, a move that could have been considered a violation of his gag order. The judge said she was taking it under advisement. But I did see some of the talking heads commenting on it and said that throwing him in jail for that would have been considered maybe a bridge too far. But now Roger Stone has an 8-month time period in which he's got to remain on the best of behavior. To quote the idiot in the White House, we'll see what happens. Matthew Whitaker, remember him, the Trump's former acting attorney general, testified before a closed door hearing yesterday in front of the House Judiciary Committee. Gerald Nadler, who was the chairman of that committee, came out of the hearing and said to the press that Matthew Whitaker did not deny that Donald Trump called him to discuss the case against Michael Cohen. Here's Nadler talking to the assembled reporters outside the hearing room.
Big breaking news from the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Jerry Nadler, telling reporters a few minutes ago that former acting attorney general Matthew Whitaker, in a meeting today, did not deny having conversations with the president that could become critical in an obstruction of justice investigation out of the Mueller probe and Southern District of New York.
The three main takeaways that we take away from today. One, unlike in the hearing room, Mr. Whitaker did not deny that the president called him to discuss Michael Cohen, the Michael Cohen case, and personnel decisions in the Southern District. Two, while he was acting attorney general, Mr. Whitaker was directly involved in conversations about whether to fire one or more U.S. attorneys. And three, while he was attorney general, acting attorney general, Mr. Whitaker was involved in conversations about the scope of the Southern District of New York U.S. Attorney Berman's recusal and whether the Southern District went too far in pursuing the campaign finance case in which the president was listed as individual number one. Those are the three takeaways from our from today.
Okay, so there you go, Gerald Nadler. By the way, I don't know if it's Mueller's office or just the Republicans, but they're pushing back on Nadler's statement. We'll see. It happened. Just thought I would share that with you. Okay, so today is Thursday. That means there are now 15 Democrats running for the presidency. Beto O'Rourke unbelievably made it official this morning.
Amy and I are happy to share with you that I'm running to serve you as the next president of the United States of America. This is a defining moment of truth for this country and for every single one of us.
Okay.
The challenges that we face right now, the interconnected crises in our economy, our democracy, and our climate have never been greater. And they will either consume us or they will afford us the greatest opportunity to unleash the genius of the United States of America. In other words, this moment of peril produces perhaps the greatest moment of promise for this country and for everyone inside of it.
Okay, if you say so. So that's Beto O'Rourke. He released a video this morning. He's in Iowa today driving around a rented Dodge Caravan. He'll have a big kickoff event in El Paso in the coming days or so. Today, Donald Trump, I mentioned earlier, spoke to the press from the Oval Office where he was meeting with Ireland's prime minister. He was asked about Beto O'Rourke jumping into the presidential race. I could read what he said. I have the quote transcribed because I know you hate his voice, but it's just so unbelievable that he actually said these words. The president, who mocked a reporter who has a physical disability, and he mocked his disability with hand movements. The president, who is about whom there have been discussions, reportedly, among senior administration officials as to whether or not they should use the 25th Amendment to remove him from office, that guy had the nerve to say that the way Beto O'Rourke moves his hands, he must be crazy. Seriously. Sorry, it's only 18 seconds. Let me play him saying it because it's just unbelievable.
Well, I think he's got a lot of hand movement. I've never seen so much hand movement. I said, is he crazy or is that just the way he acts?
No, that's
so,
you.
I've never seen hand movement. I watched him a little while this morning doing, I assume it was some kind of a news conference. And I've actually never seen anything quite like it. Study it. I'm sure you'll agree.
Study it. I'm sure you'll agree. Oh, my God. The man is fucking certifiable. Congress, by the way, in case you were wondering, when they were done with their votes this afternoon, which the big ones are done, they're heading out for their March recess. Just so you know, they'll be on vacation again next week, in case you're wondering. The administration yesterday finally reversed its position on the Boeing 737 MAX jets and ordered the planes grounded. The FAA finally citing new satellite data and evidence gathered from the scene of Sunday's crash in Ethiopia, which occurred 6 minutes after takeoff. The U.S. was the last country to do so. Yeah. From the Misery Loves Company files, we head to Great Britain, where today marks another day of Brexit voting after lawmakers yesterday rejected the option of a no-deal Brexit. So Parliament returned today to vote on whether Brexit should be postponed for a couple of months to give everyone more time to figure this out. There were actually, it was more than just that one vote. So this has already happened. So here's what went on. The British Parliament voted down the call for a second referendum. That was another choice they were given today to vote, to do it all over again, have a new Brexit vote. Just like we wished we could have a do-over of the 2020 presidential election here. I guess some were hoping for a do-over of the Brexit vote. Well, that failed resoundingly, 334 to 85. And regarding, they did vote to delay Brexit. The final vote on that was 412 to 202, although the European Union must still formally agree to it before March 29th. Yeah, that's the deadline for the UK to leave the European Union. Dennis Campbell of UK Progressive Magazine will join us tomorrow to try to explain what the fuck is going on there and what happens next, because I have no clue. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross testified today before the House Oversight and Reform Committee about his controversial and court challenged decision to add a citizenship question to the 2020 census. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin was also testifying today, he before the House Ways and Means and Senate Finance Committees, answering questions about Trump's fiscal 2020 budget proposal and more. Yeah. Trump's Education Department budget released on Monday calls for ending a loan forgiveness program and would alter other student loan policies. House Democrats, of course, are unlikely to approve those proposed changes. And finally, a shout out to California's Governor Gavin Newsom, who yesterday signed an executive order placing a moratorium on executions. In doing so, he granted 737 inmates a reprieve from their death sentences. Newsom also withdrew the lethal injection regulations that death penalty opponents already have tied up in courts and moved to close a new execution chamber, which has never been used. Let's see. California has not executed an inmate since 2006. And since then, the state's death row population has grown to house one of every four condemned inmates in the United States. Donald Trump, for his part, in response, said he is, quote, not thrilled. I'm not thrilled with the governor's action. Although I did see somebody on Twitter point out the fact that Donald Trump's shutdown of the government caused a delay within the FAA, within the system, for a proposed software fix to those Boeing 737 planes. There was no movement on the fix to the software for the whole time the government was shut down. So in that sense, Trump is sort of indirectly responsible for quite a few deaths. Yeah, he's against the death penalty, or he's for the death penalty. Hi, just saying. All right. Let's see. It's almost time. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side with the one and only Howie Klein of Down with Tyranny and the Blue America Pack coming up next. Don't go away. I'm Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com, on Netroots Radio, on GTPR, on FYI Nation, and other wonderful internet stations near you. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky?
But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTierney.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, yes. Every Thursday, we get together with our pal Howie Klein to talk politics and more. Hello, Howie Klein.
Hi, how you doing, Nicole?
I'm okay. How are you doing today?
Good. Good day today.
Yeah? Anything in particular?
Well, I was happy to see that the Senate just passed that that resolution decrying Trump's phony emergency declaration.
Yep. That was a big deal.
Passed 59 to 41.
That's
good,
right.
Good margin.
Yeah, very good. The only one last-minute defection was Tom Tillis, who had earlier
really,
in the week.
I'm really happy about that.
Yeah.
Because
the
end of his career in politics, he'll be defeated now. He's up for re-election in 2020. And how are people going to look at him? I mean, he wrote a major op-ed about why he was going to stand up for the Constitution and
right.
vote against Trump. And then he got a little tiny bit of a threat of a primary, and boom, he votes with Trump. And I don't think that's going to please anybody.
No.
Certainly going to piss off independents, and some Republicans aren't going to like it. And I think that's going to be enough for him to lose his seat. I'm trying to encourage Brad Miller, former congressman from North Carolina, to run. I don't know if that's going to work or not. But there are a few good candidates in there.
That would be great. Brad Miller is a good one.
Yeah, Brad's amazing. He's, you know, I feel like he's the best elected official from North Carolina in decades.
Hmm. Okay. Well, hopefully he'll get in there and we can build on that.
I don't know that he will. I mean, I think he, you know, he's saying he's, you know, he's in private law practice now, and he says he's staying there, but we'll see.
Oh, okay. There was also a big rebuke of Trump in the House today, where it was. I hate to say it was a unanimous vote, even though it was 420-0 on the House urging the Justice Department to make Robert Mueller's full report public and available to Congress. Obviously, it's a non-binding vote, but the fact that it was virtually unanimous, four members of Congress voted present. And
right. I understand that Matt Gaetz was actually able to pull his head out of Trump's ass long enough to vote present and then stick it back up Trump's ass.
Yes. And the others were Gosar of Arizona. He's the dentist who can read body language. Massey and Amash.
Yeah. Amash and Massey, I'm sure, have their own, you know, convoluted reasons for doing it. That are based on principle. They're both principled guys.
Yeah.
So I don't want to condemn them until I read what they have to say. I looked for Amash's. It wasn't there yet. But I'm sure that they have a reason. You know, unlike Gates, who's just insane.
Yes. Who said something along the lines, well, of course, I think that everyone should be able to see the report. I just don't need to back up Nancy Pelosi to say so. He's such a
that would be Gates.
Yes. That would be Gates. Yes.
Then so, that won't be Massey and Amash. They'll have some civil liberties reason for not backing it. I don't know what their reason is, but they'll have actual reason.
Good. Okay. Well, I'm curious to see what it is. It'll be an interesting postscript on that vote. Then the Senate brings this up. I don't know. What do you think it'll do in the Senate? You think there'll be a few defections enough to make this pass in the Senate?
I do.
Well, it should, because it's...
Although, now that I think about it, didn't McTurtle already say he won't bring it up?
Is that what he... I mean, McTurtle always says he won't bring things up. I don't know if that's why. I don't know.
Yeah, I think he said he's not going to let a vote happen on it.
Okay. Well, that wouldn't surprise me. But
no.
That's where we are. All right. I know we usually, we talk politics.
Just one postscript on McTurtle.
Okay.
His approval rating in Kentucky, he's also up for re-election, I think it was about 30%, 30-something percent.
Wow.
And most people in Kentucky think he's been in too long and he needs to move along.
I saw his chief of staff just left today. I mean, was it you who wrote that you think he's not going to run for re-election?
No, I haven't written that.
Somebody wrote that today.
You know, I could see that possibility, especially if he starts seeing polling that's showing him losing to a specific Democrat. In other words, there is no specific Democrat yet, but there will be. There are a couple of good possibilities. And once they declare they're going to run and the polls start asking, and if McConnell starts seeing that he's going to lose to somebody, I think he'll back out. He's the longest serving senator in Kentucky's history.
Wow. All right. Well, it's time to retire him to the horse farm, I think, if anybody, you know.
A lot of horses there.
Yeah, too. I know. That's why I said that. By the way, Donald Trump just all cap tweeted the word veto. And our friend
He claimed that it was already crazy earlier today.
He what?
He claimed that Beto was crazy.
Yes, he did.
And
because
he said the way he could tell that Beto was crazy is by looking at his hand gestures.
Yes. Yeah, I know. I played the clip earlier just because I couldn't believe that the fucking moron about whom the 25th Amendment has been bandied about to remove him from office because he's certifiable is calling someone else crazy because he talks with his hands. Oy, yeah. Give me a fucking break. Speaking of Beto, Beto jumped in, announced his candidacy for the presidency this morning. Any thoughts on why he's doing this?
Yes, I do have some thoughts about it, and I want to speak from I just want to give a little background to the people who don't know that I know Beto.
Uh-huh.
and talk about that for a minute.
Okay.
Which is that when I first met Beto, although I knew a little tiny bit about him because he as a musician played in the same kinds of clubs that the bands that were on my label used to play at, small clubs in the middle of the country, but I didn't really know him at all. But I knew the band. But then when I found out that he was a city councilman in El Paso, a so-called reformer, I got interested. That here, this guy from a punk rock band, more or less, was in the city council. So as it turned out, I learned that he was not all that he made himself out to be on the city council. He was taking a lot of developer money and really sort of a champion of gentrification of some very, very specific old historic neighborhoods. And there was a lot of opposition in those neighborhoods to what he did. The stuff didn't turn out as well as he thought it was. And, you know, that's how it goes. Then he ran for Congress. And when he ran for Congress, I didn't know that stuff about the city council. He ran against an entrenched ally of Pelosi's, a Democrat who was extremely corrupt and had been in there a long time. And he was kind of a conservative old Democrat, definitely a pro-war kind of guy. And Beto ran against him with a very flashy kind of campaign, the way he does these kind of flashy campaigns. You know, a young, nice-looking, energetic guy, you know, without a lot of specifics on issues, ran against someone who's got a horrible record and is really, really bad. So Blue America backed him, and we did some independent expenditures on his behalf, and he wound up winning. And then he gets into Congress, and he's like nothing.
Hmm.
So much nothing that we never backed him again.
Wow.
I mean, you know, like right now we're backing the incumbents, not every incumbent that we ever endorsed, but we're certainly backing, you know, the people that are doing a great job, like Ted Lieu, like Alexandria Ocasio,
right.
Like Rashida Tlaib.
Right.
I mean, we're backing people who we helped get in, who we think are great. And with Beto, it's not like we were against him. We certainly weren't. But he was just like a garden variety Democrat, a backbencher who never made waves and never did anything, sometimes voted well, sometimes voted badly. He wound up joining the New Dems. And
right.
then it seemed to sort of go in a little more conservative direction than he had been. So I wasn't happy with him. And, you know, occasionally I would talk to him. He was always open to conversation. And, you know, when I asked him about why he joined the New Dems, he said, oh, you know, it's just a once a week lunch. And I hear what, you know, their perspective on things. But, you know, not good, not inspiring, not anything. But then when he ran against Ted Cruz, wow.
Yeah.
So here's a guy who's kind of okay and likable and not bad on most policy and good on a few things, bad on a couple of things. But he's running against Ted Cruz, an arch villain. And I thought, hey, what the hell? Let's give him a hand.
Sure.
So we did back him for his run. And I thought he did a great job. Now, he says that in the middle of that campaign, or in the beginning, actually in the beginning of that campaign, he got sort of like some kind of superpower. He doesn't call it a superpower, but he got like this something that came into him from the outside. Doesn't know where it comes from. It's what he says. He doesn't know how he got it, where it came from.
Right.
But suddenly this kind of an energy entered his body.
Uh-oh.
and made him say things.
Hmm.
and made him, you know, move his hands around in a way that would disturb Donald Trump. And he became a really good candidate.
Yeah.
I had never seen him as good as he was, and he got better and better as the campaign proceeded. So I was very excited about him by the end, and he came close to beating Cruz, but he didn't beat Cruz.
Right.
And now he had two choices. Well, he had more than two. I mean,
yes.
First of all, he's wealthy, so
yes.
It's not like, you know, he has to feed his family.
Right.
Or, you know, at all. He married into a very, very rich family.
That's right.
And by the way, when I said that wealthy developers supported him in his when he was a city councilman, that includes a very sketchy Republican firm, a real sort of scummy firm, who only supports Republicans and him.
Wow.
And his father-in-law owns it.
Of course. Uh-huh.
Of course.
Yeah.
So anyway, no worries about him for money, but he had to decide. He's a young guy. He had to decide what he's going to do for his career. He could have run against John Cornyn, who's
yes.
up in 2020.
Yes.
There was some early polling that showed them neck and neck. And I think he was thinking very seriously about it. I know he had a long talk with Schumer, who tried to talk him into it. And then another poll came out, and literally just a poll comes out one day, a poll comes out another day, maybe a poll will come out next week too. But the poll showed him losing badly to Cornyn. And the next day, he starts hinting strongly that he's going to run for president, and he never looked back.
Wow.
Once that poll came out, he was running. And, it's funny. I did a poll last night because it leaked out that he would be announcing today. So I did a poll last night asking people, you know, what do you think? He's going to announce tomorrow. Are you very happy? Are you just happy? Are you neutral? or are you unhappy?
Uh-huh.
And 18% of the people said they were happy or very happy. That's it.
Okay.
18%. Everybody else, mostly 44% were neutral, and then everybody else was unhappy. So that, you know, I mean, that's just people who follow me on Twitter or happen to have seen the tweet somehow. But I'm getting a feeling from social media that people aren't all that excited about him, that, you know, that people who were, you know, crazy, wild, excited about him running against Ted Cruz, it's not gonna, you know, translate into him running for president. That's
right.
That's my feelings, and we'll see. You know, I just spoke to a friend of mine in Texas who said, you know, kind of upper middle class Texas women are nuts about him, and they're really excited about this. Okay. You know,
okay.
You don't win the presidency that way. Apparently,
no.
You don't even win the Senate in Texas
right.
that way.
Yep.
But there's going to be some enthusiasm. I don't think it's going to be enough for him to go the whole distance. I think he's going to figure out pretty fast that this ain't happening. And I could be wrong, of course. Hey, maybe he'll catch fire. But I at this point, I don't think so. My worry is that he'll team up with Status Quo Joe.
Yeah.
That's what I fear, that it'll be a Biden-Beto, and they'll run as a ticket in the primary.
Which
what I don't want to see.
Again, in this year of the woman, and when it's after we've learned really how important women of color are to the Democratic coalition, two white guys on the ticket is not the way to win in 2020.
I completely agree with you. I have been saying for the entire cycle that it's going to have to be one man and one woman.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a woman running for president with a man for VP.
Yep.
Could be a man for president with a woman for VP. But it really, the Democratic Party for the next few cycles, at least the next four or five cycles, has to have a woman on the
That's
ticket
right.
as far as I'm concerned.
In fact, I heard some talk yesterday that Donald Trump is looking at dumping Mike Pence and putting Nikki Haley on the ticket because he sees the writing on the wall that two white guys in 2020 is not the way to win.
For them, though. The Nikki Haley stuff has been going on for a while. I don't think she's interested in running with
–
herself once she's out of there. And in terms of dumping Pence, that's been talked about a bit. And, Pence has a lot of followers who Trump thinks he'll hold on to, evangelicals who are really more attracted to Pence than they are to Trump.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he'll hang on to some of them, but some of them maybe not. And he can't afford to alienate anybody in his coalition at all. He's too shaky ground for that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I just saw it's a random tweet on Twitter. I don't know who this person is, but the comment resonated with me. They wrote, "Must be frustrating to be Elizabeth Warren, rolling out policy after policy and then seeing Beto make a splash by saying he just like needs to be in it, man."
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. That's the Twitter person got it right.
Yeah.
That Beto does not have any substance. I mean, the speech was really good that he wrote, mm-hmm. and he immediately then sent out the exact same speech as a that was on the video, the announcement video, sent it out as an email, and it's good. And uh-huh. whoever wrote it for him, he should give them a bonus. But there's no substance.
Really?
He identifies a lot of problems. Excuse me. But where does he stand on those problems? He had an opportunity to be one of the co-sponsors, like the majority of Democrats mm-hmm. in the House were,
mm-hmm.
for the Medicare for All, but he never did. He teased people, hinting that he was for it, but where was the courage of his convictions?
Yeah.
And during the campaign, he never campaigned on it. I talked to him about it, and he kind of intimated to me that he was for it. But he would never co-sponsor it, even though most Democrats, including a lot of Democrats to the right of him, Blue Dogs and New Dems, co-sponsored Medicare for All. He didn't.
Wow.
Nor did he. And he's also talking about how we've got to save the world and from global warming, but he never co-sponsored the Green New Deal either.
Right.
He can identify the problems, which is pretty easy. He can certainly, the easiest thing in the world is to show that you're better than Donald Trump. But where is he beyond that?
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, among others, are talking about very specific policy that they've worked out over years.
Yep.
And where this kid just comes in and he says, yeah, me too.
Right.
Me too what?
Right.
Me too where?
Yeah.
What? Who? I mean... I just think he should have run. I wish he would have run for Senate.
Yeah, no, I do too. I do too.
It's let
his ego get
more.
In the way.
I used an RFK. I think I have my Beto story coming out tomorrow.
Okay.
But I used a quote that I want to read if I don't keep choking. Tom Suozzi gave me. Tom Suozzi is a moderate Long Island congressman, but he happens to be a friend of mine. And he we were talking about a completely different topic yesterday, which had to do with how do you get to
older Americans who have, the electoral power in this country and growing electoral power in this country. And how do you get to them and convince them that, something like the Green New Deal. So Suozzi is a co-sponsor of the Green New Deal. So how do you convince them that they should basically pay for the Green New Deal, which is going to have effect after they're dead? And he says it's not just convincing them that it's good for their grandchildren. He said that's not going to do it. You need to convince them that it's the right thing to do. What he said is you have to appeal to their better angels. That's a quote. People want to do the right thing for the world, for the country. We have to lay out the case and show them why it's the right thing so that they can embrace it with enthusiasm. Whenever people try and dissuade me, talking about himself, about what's possible and what's not, I try to remember
what it felt like to be a swashbuckling idealist before I got beaten up in some tough political battles. He was barely out of his 20s, by the way, when he ran for mayor. He became mayor. He served four terms as mayor. He was, you know, always being lauded as the best mayor of a small city in America. He won awards. He did a lot when he was mayor. So then what he goes into is this, you know, Bobby Kennedy is one of his political heroes. He talks about Kennedy a lot, and he read me this quote from Kennedy that I used in my post, and made me think about Beto today as well, in the comparison between Beto and Bernie. So let me read it, and then, you know, let's see if everybody gets what I'm talking about.
Okay.
So this is Swazi reading a Bobby Kennedy quote. This world demands the qualities of youth, not a time of life, but a state of mind, a temper of the will, a quality of the imagination, a predominance of courage over timidity, of the appetite for adventure over the life of ease. So to me, it sounds like he's describing Bernie Sanders. It doesn't sound like he's describing Beto O'Rourke, who, you know, I hate to say it, was a timid guy politically. He was always a little bit worried. Now, he's in a district that's never going to vote for a Republican. It's a blue, blue, blue district. And yet, he always was very, very timid, which made me think, what is he so timid about? Why is he not being more progressive? Why is he always holding back? Why is he never among who vote the right way? You know, I never could understand it until I figured out, oh, yes, he's going to run for higher office. That's what this is about. He's looking at creating a record for himself as a Republican light moderate rather than as a fighting progressive. And what Bobby Kennedy was describing in that quote was when he's describing what the attributes of youth were and saying that it's not age, but it's a state of mind, he was describing someone who would stand up and be, you know, be strong and be ready to go to the mat. And that I'm afraid that's not Beto.
No.
It is Bernie.
Yes, I agree 100%. It is Bernie, and it is a state of mind. And it's interesting that still you look at the crowd in any Bernie Sanders rally, and it is young, and it is diverse, and it's America. Howie Klein, before we run out of time, I do want to get your take on the story that I think is captivating the country today for a number of reasons, and that is the story of the college admissions scandal. Just saw this New York Magazine has a story. Here's a little excerpt. Former school official on Kushner getting into Harvard, quote, his GPA didn't warrant it. His SAT scores didn't warrant it. We thought for sure there was no way this was going to happen. Then lo and behold, Jared was accepted. His dad donated $2.5 million. Well, you have a post.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
Are you reading that from New York Magazine, or are you reading that from my post?
That is from the New York Magazine, believe it or not.
I have a post going up in exactly 8 minutes.
I know.
That talks about that.
I know. That's why I'm reading it to you, because I saw your post that's going up in 8 minutes. So you cited that very same story.
And some other stuff, because as it turns out, I'm not supposed to be talking about this, but I'm going to, so please don't anyone repeat it. But his tutor in high, he went to a yeshiva in Paramus.
Okay.
And he wasn't a very good student there. And he had a tutor. As it turns out, many years have passed since then, but the tutor is a good friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
The tutor told me he is so stupid that he would be lucky to get into any decent school.
Wow.
You know, he's not stupid enough not to get into anything. But
right.
The thought was, he'd be lucky to get into, like, a good state university. He'd be lucky to get into Rutgers there in New Jersey, which is where he was from. and when he got into Harvard, everyone was shocked. Everyone at the yeshiva was shocked. And some people were angry because it became very apparent very quickly that his father, who's a crook,
yep.
and went to jail, by
yep.
the way.
Yes, he did.
That his father paid off Harvard. They gave Harvard $250,000 a year for 10 years.
Wow.
Presumably to cover both Jared and his brother, who also went to Harvard.
Huh.
And I don't know if his brother is smart or dumb. I have no idea. Sorry for using those terms. But they both went to Harvard. Jared certainly was not someone who could. The anger back in New Jersey was that because he got into Harvard, more deserving students who certainly had much better grades and applied themselves better and had better SAT scores and were, you know, the kind of people who Harvard supposedly likes to take in, supposedly, they didn't get in. There was no places for them because of Jared.
Yeah.
So that was so that caused a little bit of anger. But in my piece, I talk about those same things that you were just talking about and about my friend, the tutor, and how shocked the tutor was to find out that Jared, who the tutor thought would, you know, be lucky to get into Rutgers, wound up getting into Harvard. But what I also talk about is Jared's father-in-law. Jared's father-in-law, who, you know, is pretending
Donald
to
Trump,
be president of the United
right.
States now,
yes. yeah.
basically flunked out of Fordham. Fordham is a decent school, but it doesn't have high academic qualifications to get in. You can pretty much get in there. It's not that difficult. In other words, if you're a C plus or a B minus student, you can get into Fordham.
Okay.
And got into Fordham, did really, really badly. You know, he won't, obviously he's been able to tie up his academic records, but people who claim that they've seen them say he was flunking out of the school.
Mm-hmm.
At which point he went to his brother's former roommate, who was an admissions officer at Wharton or University of Pennsylvania, which
right.
is a very hard school to get into. You get in there, you have to have, and in those days especially, you had to have an A plus. And when I mean A plus, I mean you had to have an A plus more stuff
sure.
in order to get in. Very, very hard school to get into. And Donald Trump got in. So how does someone flunking out of a kind of not a mediocre school get into one of the best schools in the country? And that was odd. But he's kept that very, very, very secret, how he got in. But he is constantly bragging about, oh, this is the toughest school in the country. This is the hardest school anyone could get into. And he'd always be exaggerating that it was, better than Harvard and better than Yale and better than Princeton. But he got in, and that proves how smart he is. Stable genius.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, that's not how he got in. So this whole scandal goes back to this, you know, privileged rich people, and it's not a new thing. I mean, it's an interesting thing in the news right now, and the way they caught it and the way they're treating it as a criminal offense is very interesting, but it's certainly not new.
Right. No, this
and
has been going
you
on.
Look at, you know, the guy who's at the top of the social ladder right now, the so-called president of the United States.
Yep.
There he is, a perfect example of it.
Unbelievable. And you got to wonder about his sons, too, because obviously they're not rocket scientists. And they went to Ivy League schools as well.
And Ivanka as well.
Yep, absolutely. I should have said his spawn rather than his sons, because they're all in it together. Yeah, and so today I noticed that a group of rejected students who should have been able to get into some of these schools but were turned down have filed a class action lawsuit. So I'm sure we'll hear a lot more talk about that.
The class action lawsuit is not against Kushner or Trump. It's against
right.
The schools that accepted these kids who were paid off, right?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah,
because these kids who were qualified, who worked their asses off to legitimately get the grades to get into these schools, were told no. I mean, I've seen tweets and posts from people whose kid had a 4.3 GPA and couldn't get into the school of his choice. I forget what school it was. But, you know, then you see these you know, snotty rich kids get in. I don't understand what the parents are thinking, because, as a parent of somebody who is not a good student, the last thing I wanted to do was set my kid up to fail. I mean, I ultimately.
That's funny you should say that,
yeah.
because I talk about that in my post that's coming out in 2 minutes
uh-huh.
as well. My first college roommate, his mother worked for the Board of Education, and she was in a position to monkey with his permanent record, which she did. So he was accepted into a school where he could never have done well. He didn't have the academic achievements or the intellectual ability to do well there. So he flunked out.
Yep.
And, you know, he didn't even make it through the end of the freshman year. He was,
wow.
I mean, he was getting A's on all his papers because his roommate was writing his papers for him. but he was everything else was an F.
Wow.
So A on the paper, F on everything else, and you know the teacher said, "Hey, there's something going on here," and he finally just decided to leave and he left. But what you say about a mother putting a child or a parent putting a child in a position to fail, that's exactly what she did.
Yeah.
She thought she was putting him in a position where he would have an opportunity to do well. But instead, she, you know, maybe he should have gone to a community college to start.
Exactly.
But instead, she puts him into a very, very highly competitive situation where it just ain't going to happen.
Crazy. Well, that's what's in the news today. Howie Klein, always a pleasure. Again, your post on this college admission scandal goes live at downwithtyranny.com. Oh, in about 10 seconds or so. Thank you so much, Howie. It is always great to talk with you on Thursdays. We'll do it again next week.
Good.
All right.
See you then, Nicole.
You too. Take care. Bye. And I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great night. Bye.